Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we talk about adding boom to your beige box by building a custom subwoofer enclosure. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McGain. It seems that this month on the Hardware Asylum Podcast, we're going to be talking all audio, some audiophile and some crazy audio stuff.
That's fair.
And it all started with Darren bringing over some stuff saying, hey, can you fix this? And I'm like, huh? And then I'm going to let him tell it though.
All right. So not too long ago, I upgraded my daughter's gaming PC and she had asked me if I had any actual speakers as opposed to headphones because in my house, we're pretty much all headphone users when we use the PC. But she wanted to have the option of watching, you know, YouTube or movies or whatever with some speakers.
Yeah, well, speakers are good. I am a fan of having speakers on my desk.
So I've had speakers in the past, and I knew I had a pair that had been, I guess, collecting rust in my system. So I pulled out this Logitech system that I think maybe even came with the machine at some point. I'm not even really sure.
They're kind of all over the place. I mean, what are these? This is the Logitech Z313. I'll put a link down in the show notes.
Yeah, this is kind of one of those staples of the Logitech. It's a 2.1 system. Mm-hmm. You got a couple of nice looking tweeters and you got a decent sized subwoofer, but it isn't like giant.
No.
So good for space, decent sound. And of course you got the Logitech name and controls on it. So you know it's going to be pretty solid performer for the size.
Yeah. And, you know, if we go and look at it here, it's like the box is, what, 6x8x7 or something like that?
Something like that.
It's got a little 4-inch woofer that's downfiring with a port that's in the front. Typical Logitech configuration.
So as it turned out, I pulled this thing out and I was right, I did have it. And when I went to hook it up, I found that it was broken.
Yeah. And I'm not going to do it right now, but I could pick this up. There's a lot of stuff that's moving around inside it and some screws that are on the bottom that should be there that aren't. So I suspect that
at some point, somebody tried to fix this, maybe me, and that's probably how it got shelved in the first place.
Yeah. So you brought it over and said, hey, these are broken. Maybe it could be a good project for the YouTube channel.
Well, yeah, because these are something you can buy today. I'm like, how hard is it to get these fixed if they break?
Yeah. And the irony is that I was looking for a good 2.1 system for my retro projects. And so I went out and actually bought a set of high-end Creative 2.0 speakers that were self-powered that I could plug into the retro machine so that I could have sound. But it wasn't really the configuration I wanted. I really wanted a subwoofer and satellite speakers and stuff. This Logitech Z313 would be perfect for that. So it's like, hey, well, let's just put it together and make it work. But I want to kind of push things.
Okay.
And, you know, something, a common thread on the podcast is that I like to kind of amp things up. I'm a modder by nature, audiophile, car enthusiast, motorcycle guy. You name it, I probably dabbled. So I was originally thinking, well, we could go and make this speaker system the way that Logitech should have made it.
Oh boy. Okay. So how, I'm afraid to ask now, how could we make it better?
Well, for one, we could replace the driver so that it actually hits lower.
Ooh, bigger subwoofer. I like it.
Bigger subwoofer. But then we would be limited to the built-in amplifier that's in it. So I was thinking, well, maybe what we do is take electronics out of it and kind of add some physics.
So I think if I'm not mistaken, it's a 25-watt 2.1, right? Mm-hmm.
25 watt, and I think the satellites are 5 watts each.
Yeah, little tweeters, and they've got ports too.
And the woofer is 15 watts, so it's not a big, powerful system at all.
Well, yeah, it's a little desktop system. Yeah. Most likely came from a laptop or like I said, it was packaged with a gaming PC.
Yeah, and I think the frequency response was something like 50 hertz all the way up to 20 kilohertz or something like that. But if we go and add another 4-inch woofer to it.
Okay, so replace the woofer. Makes sense.
Well, we could replace the woofer, but what happens if we add a second woofer?
Okay, hold on, because now this is getting a little crazy.
Yeah.
So I've done car audio, and I know you have too.
Uh-huh.
So there are a lot of ways that you can add a second woofer. A lot of ways.
A lot of ways, yeah. The logical way would be, hey, let's just cut a hole in it and add another woofer. that doesn't really gain us anything except having another speaker in the box.
Which is cool.
But if we do what they call an isobaric loading, an isobaric is basically when you bind two speakers together. What that does is it kind of, it doesn't necessarily double the amount of power that can be output, but it does lower the frequency response. So in this particular case, if we added another woofer to the existing four, you know, buy another one off eBay. I think I saw one for $12. Add another one of those, then instead of hitting at 50 hertz, it might go down to 40 hertz.
Okay, I think I see where you're going here. But then you need more power.
And,
okay.
And we have a problem with the internal amplifier and what can be output. I mean, 15 watts isn't a lot. And a 25 watt max is like, you know, we're kind of limited here. So that is when I was like, well, let's fix it for the channel, because I think that would be a really great project.
Right.
And then we could use that as kind of a baseline litmus saying, well, this is our 2.1 stereo system for the retro PC. You can buy these now, but I fixed this one and it's, you know, basically free for me.
Yay.
But then it's like, hey, let's build one that's better.
Okay. Wait a minute now. So we're already talking about replacing the amplifier. And adding a speaker, but if I'm not mistaken, now you're talking about replacing the speaker, and that means adding two new speakers.
Really, what we've come down to is that I can modify this existing box, but we're really limited by the box. So it's like, well, what if we remove that limitation and just kind of go above and beyond and kind of mod this the way that it should be without actually modding, quote unquote, this.
So the goal, if I'm not mistaken, is we're going to build a new box to replace the subwoofer box. The tweeters are fine. Don't need much attention there because they don't need a lot of power. And to be fair, Logitech puts out pretty great tweeters for the money, especially.
Yeah.
So you're talking about building a new box.
Building a new box.
That's hopefully not, you know, a 10 foot by 10 foot enclosure, right? We're talking about something similar.
Yeah, something similar that we can put on our desktop. And we're thinking not the size of the Bose Acoustimass,
right?
But definitely not like a 10-inch woofer size.
So an appropriate replacement. All right, I'm on board. So what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that I've already kind of bought some components. And that's what I really wanted to talk about on this particular podcast. So I'll basically just start out with, let's start with the amplifier.
Okay, so.
So I have the, it's in a box and Darren can open it. And
all right, I'm very curious. So I don't recognize the brand, but I'm guessing that's price driven.
Lipa or Lipi, something like that.
Ooh.
I picked this off of Parts Express, although there are other knockoffs that are available. Now, the reason I picked this is because it is a, I'm going to read the box so I don't get it wrong here. It's a 2.1 channel mini plate amplifier. Now, the plate amplifier is important because this is how most home theater powered subwoofers are configured. They have the amplifier that just mounts inside the box to the back of it. And then all you have to do is plug in your audio input, plug the other part into the wall, and you have a self-contained subwoofer. And this guy supports 2.1, so you have two channels at 30 watts each, and then we have a bridged channel, it's basically the same thing, but it will put out 60 watts. So we're already, four times the power of the Logitech amplifier?
But that's not it, because you've also improved the connectivity here, because you have true RCA line-ins and line-outs, and you've got real audiophile speaker plugs, which means, of course, that we're going to have to modify those runs for the tweeters.
Yeah, or replace them or use my creatives, because the great thing about this particular amplifier, and I'll have to put a link down in the show notes so everyone can check this out, but if you go and put the amp down, I will go and point out some things.
Okay.
So we have speaker outs right here. Those are pretty logical, right? We have RCA in and an RCA out, which means that we can take a line level input and then also take that same line level and go out to another amplifier or another speaker, or go directly into my creative speakers that have the RCA line level inputs on them already.
Nice.
So I can just basically bind this new subwoofer with the speakers I bought from Creative already, or use the Logitech ones that we were just talking about. Now, we have a couple switches down here. One of them will turn off the two channels. So it basically disables one of the amplifiers and makes it just the dedicated subwoofer.
Oh, nice.
Now, it doesn't make it 120 watts. You still only have that 60 watt subwoofer channel, but it disables basically the speaker outputs.
Right. So you could use it, if you will, as a component subwoofer as opposed to a 2.1 contained system.
Exactly. And we have gain controls here. We also have an active crossover, which is important for subwoofers. So that way we can dial in what our crossover point is to filter out whatever frequency we want in the subwoofer.
Right. So it's nice. So you don't over or underdrive the woofers.
Mm-hmm. So we can basically say, I want this, you know, like if I tune the box to be 80 hertz, for instance, I can do the cutoff at 150 hertz. And basically the box will have a nice curve at that point, and then nothing else will go to the sub.
Very nice. I think what I like most about this, though, is it's not really that much bigger than the default panel that's on the back of them now. Maybe right. Twice the size.
Yeah, if we go and pull up the Logitech right now, the plate amplifier is two pieces. So we have the plate that's on the back that has the speaker inputs and outputs and the power cord. And inside the box is a transformer that actually powers everything together. Whereas this is all self-contained. And if you look carefully, you know, I'm sure you can recognize some of this stuff. This channel right here with these big chokes, this is the subwoofer, the bridged part. So right. We have the two chokes which bind together. Well, over here is the two channel where we have four chokes. So that is basically the amplifier circuit right here. And then we have some other electronics. Now, the one thing that surprises me is that this is a 60 watt amp. There are no heat sinks or visible heat sinks on here.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that they aren't already using the plate because it looks like an aluminum plate.
Mm-hmm. And it very well could be. It's just odd because I am accustomed seeing, you know, 100, 300 watt amplifiers that have nice big heat sinks and some of them with active cooling. And you don't see that on a plate amplifier so much. So the next part, once we have the plate amplifier problem solved, which is right here, which I think this thing is freaking awesome.
Yeah, it looks great.
I've been told that it is a bit underpowered. So the wattage that's rated is at 4 ohm, and most home theater speakers are 8 ohm nominal. And of course, unless you have two drivers and you know, wire them correctly, you can get it down to 4 ohm. You might be able to get your 60 watts, but the speakers I picked, I think are going to be a perfect match.
Well, I was going to say the woofer that's in it is already a 4 ohm, so we're already headed that direction either way.
Yeah, although 15 watts, I'm not sure if it would be able to handle a 60 watt amp.
Well, we'd find out pretty quick, I guess, and maybe we should do that.
Yeah.
All right,
so the next is
TB speakers.
So I'm going to put another link in the show notes. This is the Tang Bang. Tang Bang.
What? Tang Bang speakers.
I'm assuming that it's going to be a bit Chinese.
They're sponsoring audiophile systems somewhere near you. Oh, this is a little harder to open than I thought. Okay, I see.
Yeah, it's kind of flares apart.
Oh, wow. That's a completely different.
Okay.
So you have two of these?
I have two of these. So.
Oh, wow.
So this is the Tang Bang W5-1138 SMF 5 1/4 paper cone subwoofer speaker.
I'm opening it because I want to take a closer look at it. It's got a nice protective cover on it. This thing is heavy.
Yeah, it's a legit subwoofer. Now, the cool thing, or I should say what I think is the cool thing, we have an RMS power handling of 40 watts. We have a max power handling of 80 watts. This particular speaker is 4 ohm, and I bought two of them so that when I wire them together, it comes to 8 ohm. And that is how I'm going to control the power from the plate amplifier to control the speakers and not overdrive them.
Somebody out there is going to say, but wait, it's a subwoofer. It's tiny. But this this is a little bit bigger than even the one that came there at 5 1/4, right?
It's 5 1/4. And normally 5 1/4 are your mid bass. I mean, in any, like in car audio, you don't get a subwoofer that is any smaller than 8 for the most part. I do have a couple of 6.5-inch that were from Orion back in the day that were actually legit subwoofers.
Right.
And I ran those as a mid bass, which was kind of crazy. But this one, legit subwoofer. And the reason being is partially in the specs. So we have a frequency response of 45 hertz up to 1500 hertz. So we have a very narrow frequency response range. And this is the part you will be amazed.
I will be amazed.
The maximum linear excursion, or XMAX. Now, this is one of the specifications that denotes a subwoofer from an actual woofer. And it's usually how far the cone moves.
Sure, the travel.
This one is 9.25 millimeters.
In this size?
In that size.
Huh.
It has an amazing excursion.
Wow. Go TB.
Yeah.
Wow. I just can't get over how heavy it is and how small it is.
Yeah, the magnet on this thing is huge, and it's surprising me because it only has an 80 watt max power handling, and normally a magnet of that size would be somewhere in like the 100 to 150 watt range.
Well, it's no long throw, but how could it be in this size?
Yep. Well, yeah, if you look at the spider doesn't have a lot of excursion in it, that's for sure. But I am dying to try these things out, which I think is going to be awesome. Now, I should mention that what got me looking at these particular speakers was a YouTube channel that I follow, Hexabass. He's basically what I would call, you know, a speaker nerd. He's been doing car audio designs, speaker designs, and designing speakers for, you know, 20 some odd years. Basically, he started when we started, and he just kind of kept going on
it. Nice.
He's been designing boxes. Well, he has been doing some of that stuff on his YouTube channel and combining it with 3D printing. So one of the popular videos that I'll link down in the show notes as well, but he took a Tang Bang 3.5-inch subwoofer, because they have a 3.5-inch subwoofer.
Wow.
And then he printed a box that was basically transmission line for the most part. Is basically a box and just a really, really long port, and put the 3.5-inch in there and was able to hit down to like 35 hertz.
And what size speaker?
3.5.
Oh boy. Okay.
And you know, I think he was driving it with a lot more wattage than it's supposed to support, but that was kind of the point of the whole project. But yeah, definitely check out the video. It's really cool. And the very end of it, he has a bunch of audio demonstrations of frequency response and stuff like that. It's actually kind of interesting. But that is what got me looking at this particular brand. And I was like, well, 5.25, that would make a nice desktop woofer.
Yeah, it's just enough bigger that it's not imposing. Mm-hmm. But that's a heck of a lot more drive.
And that is why I got two of them.
One is not enough anymore.
Well, and I had mentioned before how we could modify the Logitech, and it's thinking an isobaric loading, right? Well, that is where I have this drawing here, and I'll see if I can redraw these and put them in the show notes.
Or at least take a picture, right?
Take a picture. But I was exploring how we can build a desktop subwoofer box with these speakers and have two drivers and make it interesting. So what I have here is, again, I'm kind of going with the isobaric loading. Now, obviously, we could cheapen out and put a box, have it ported, and put two drivers in it, and it would work just fine.
Pretty standard.
We could also have two individual boxes with ports and just have them connected into the same box. That would be fine as well. We need to link these two together just so that I can get the ohmage of the speakers to match the plate amplifier. I could run just one of them. But then if I really crank it up, then I'm kind of getting close to the maximum RMS for the speaker, and I'll probably blow it up. So that's kind of the design idea behind that.
Got it.
So the first box here is an isobaric loading, and I have drawn in at the top an acrylic sheet so that you can see the back of speaker one and the cone of speaker two.
Nice.
And the way isobaric works is that you have a sealed chamber between the two speakers. And you can have them in a clamshell configuration where the speaker cones are facing each other. And as long as the space between the two cones is airtight, you can wire them together.
Right.
And at that point, they work in unison.
So one is out of phase. That's important.
Yeah, one's out of phase, wired out of phase. So that when one is going forward, the other one is going backwards. And at that point, they're working together. And it, in a sense, kind of doubles the output of the woofer. But from a physics standpoint, what it does is it causes it to hit lower in the same size box.
But also increases the efficiency, right? Because they're helping each other move the air.
Yes, exactly.
So you're going to get a much faster, crisper response if you like, you know, staccato bass, for example. Mm-hmm. Dance music is a good example.
Yeah. So the sealed chamber is basically a triangle. And the idea with the acrylic sheet on the top is that you can see the speakers inside so that you know that there's a loading. The speaker number two is the one that's vented. You don't see the vent because it's below the triangle. And then there's a spot in the back for the plate amplifier.
Okay, I see it.
The box needs to be about a foot to a foot and a half to get the frequency response that I want. And with the size of the speakers, you can't, and you're putting two of them in there, it's got to be a certain size or they won't fit.
Sure. There's good math behind that. And you can go out there and find speaker box design sites that will help with that if you want to take on a project like this.
Exactly. Or, you know, have 10 years building car radio speakers and screwing up a lot of them. Now, my next one is really very similar to the Logitech design where we have a down-firing speaker, isobaric, and this one is a clamshell loading. So they are cone to cone, whereas the first one was magnet to cone. So they were working in phase. These ones will be working out of phase.
Got it.
This one does not have any acrylic sheet, so you can't see the speakers inside. You actually won't even know the speakers are there because they're facing downwards. The port is actually front-facing, just like the other, and we have the plate amplifier in the back.
Okay.
The advantage of this one is that the speakers are accessible. So when you build them this way, the ISO chamber is usually connected, and then you install the entire package into the box. So you have you bind the two together, and then you bind that into the box, whereas this first one, they're individual mounting. So you have to mount the speaker on the outside, screw it in place, mount the one on the inside, screw it in place, seal up the entire chamber, hope it's airtight, because if it doesn't, then you have leaks and it makes weird noises.
You'll flub.
The next one is kind of a variation of the first, where we have an acrylic sheet on the front, so you can see the face of the speaker and the magnet of the other speaker. That speaker is down firing. And then you have a port across the top. The challenge here is that we have to put a port into the acrylic sheet, which is easier said than done.
Well, you could cut it with a laser.
You could cut it with a laser. It's partially getting the port to bind to the acrylic.
Ah, yes.
And unless the port's acrylic, you can't really glue it in there. So I'm trying to figure out if I can make this box out of PLA and just print it on my 3D printer, you know, for 2 or 3 days. Or if I just go down and buy some half inch MDF and build it as a proper cabinet.
The old fashioned way.
Yeah. And of course, some of these other designs that I have on here are the ones we talked about where we just have two front facing cones and they're ported. Yes. And one of the box designs I wanted to really explore was some people called it a sixth order tuned or series tuned bandpass.
That's a lot of different speaker box technologies.
Yeah, and it's a design that was popular in the 60s. The speakers didn't have the XMAX. You know, they couldn't actually move very much. And to get them to hit low, the speakers needed to move quite a bit. So what they did was designed a box to limit the excursion and still allow them to hit really low. That allowed you to feed more power into them by physically controlling how much the speaker would move.
Interesting.
One speaker is in a box that's ported into another box. The nature of the size of the box and the size of the port is what limits how much the speaker will move. It's friction for the most part, kind of slowing down the driver. And by doing one into another box, you double the power basically because you have more surface area of the speaker, but you're slowing it down because it's having to go through a lot of channels to get it to move.
Very interesting.
But tuning this box has turned out to be rather difficult because nobody in the modern world designs boxes like this anymore because the speakers can handle it. You don't need to design them that way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a box design like that, but you say that's an older design, I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then this last one is basically two speakers, common port, It's the real simple design that you can get from Kmart and anywhere else.
I feel like every dime store subwoofer box is using that design. So what are you thinking is your preference?
My preference? I want to do the ISO loading. The nice thing about building speaker enclosures is that you can build one and think that it's perfect, but then, you know, if you have the skills, you might as well build a couple of them and just try them out. And I figure if I can experiment with the ISO loading, if it hits like I want, then I'll keep it. If not, then I can go with something more traditional, which would be like the standard ported box. Here's a bit of a quiz for you. You know, Darren and I have both done car audio, and we both done them at around the same time. And I'm going to give him a little quiz.
Oh boy, see how rusty I am.
Yeah. So, fourth order enclosure. When I say that, what kind of speaker enclosure do you think I'm talking about?
That's enclosed, right?
Well, kinda.
So I'm thinking, it's a push-pull system, two speakers.
Just one.
No, right? What am I thinking of? It's the two speakers.
Two speakers would be isobaric.
Well, yeah, we just talked about that, but isn't there an order box that
has two speakers?
Yeah, I am rusty.
Not really. So the fourth order box is the bass reflex.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
He says, oh, yeah, that's right. That's basically a sealed box with a port. And that's traditionally called a fourth order box. Now, when I was designing car audio, there was something that people were calling the fifth order box. And I always remember the fifth order box as being a speaker in a sealed box that was firing into a ported box. So you had a sealed enclosure behind the speaker. It was firing into a ported enclosure. And the only thing you saw was a port.
Right. But you tuned the port.
But you tuned the port to a certain frequency. And that particular box, and that's what they called a bandpass enclosure, because that it only allowed a certain frequency band to come through the port. So that was the tuning of it. And I was always told that that was a fifth order box. But the internet has told me that, no, that's actually a fourth order box. Because you can have a fourth order box firing into the port, or you can have the driver in a ported box. And I'm like, that just seems a little weird, but it makes sense.
Well, go figure.
And I did find somebody reference a fifth order enclosure where the sealed enclosure was actually ported, and that port goes into the chamber with the port and the front of the speaker. But then other people call that a sixth order enclosure, which these different orders are, some people can look at them as the amount of ports and the amount of chambers that are in a speaker, and other people talk about it's the roll-off of the frequencies, and the more orders you have, the more steep the curve is. And that's getting like really, really super nerdy.
Right.
But the last one that I wanted to talk about was the seventh order enclosure. And do you remember hearing about that?
No, I never tried to do a seventh order, although I remember folks were getting excited about them. They were very expensive.
They were. And I remember a seventh order enclosure as being a dual reflex bandpass enclosure. That was what we called it. But it's basically, if you imagine a subwoofer, on the backside of the subwoofer is a ported enclosure, and that port faces outside. The front part of it, the cone side of it, also fires into a ported enclosure, and that port faces out. And the dual reflex portion of it was that you tune the back of the speaker to one frequency and the front of the speaker to another frequency. And that allowed you to get the amplitude of a bandpass enclosure and then not have the peaks. So it'd be tuned at two different frequencies.
Interesting.
What I found out is that there's not ever a seventh order enclosure, because that's actually a sixth order enclosure.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wow, my childhood coming up and listening to all of these people talk about box enclosures and giving them order names and stuff was wrong, or was right, and now the way people understand it is wrong.
I wonder if it's just the advanced technology or if we just live in Idaho.
Yeah, it could be. It's hard to say.
Okay, Dennis, it sounds like an interesting project, and I think I see where you're going. Mm-hmm. So what's the next step?
The next step, I need to, I kind of have to plan out some stuff. I mean, first of all, we need to fix the Logitech speaker system because we need to have that as our benchmark, right?
Right, so, a baseline. I get it.
The baseline. And then after that, I need to go and kind of spend some time designing what the box is. Now, I do have some softwares that I've downloaded, and ironically, I found one on a floppy disk from way back in my car stereo days that would, it would allow you to program in your speaker specifications, and it would design the box and tune the port for you.
Nice.
And I'm like, wow, this is a precursor to the Windows ones that we can get now. So I thought, well, hey, it might be interesting to see how different it is. And what's interesting is that the formulas that all of these things follow was designed back in like the 50s. And they were in numerous books that you could buy. So people were just taking these formulas and then putting them into a computer program. So anyhow, I digress. I need to design the box and design several of them. So I can get my isobaric version. I can do one with just a single driver, for instance, just a single base reflex box. I can do two drivers. I can design several different versions of it. And then at that point, evaluate whether or not I can print that on my 3D printer, or if I really even want to, or if I should just go down to Home Depot and pick up some half inch MDF and go borrow a table saw.
There you go. Don't forget the carpet.
Oh yes, we got to do the carpet. Now, actually, I think what I might do is if I go the MDF route, I will go full cabinet mode where we can go and we'll primer the surface so that it doesn't absorb water anymore. And we'll just flat out paint it and put maybe some, some gloss and some matte on there. And actually at that point I can do graphics, maybe find somebody with a laser to go laser in some graphics or something like that. Nice. Onto the side, be able to put the box together and make it look kind of like the Logitech boxes that we just have right now. Cause those are painted wood for the most part. And then once the subwoofer is done, we'll have to test it. And we have various ways that we can test. I believe one of the rudimentary ways is that we can just get a decibel meter and then run a sine sweep across the woofer and then map out the peaks and the valleys based off of pure amplitude. One of the other ways that we can do it, we can get a calibration microphone. And these are the ones that professional audio people use to go and tune like home theaters.
Right.
And we used the same microphone when we were doing car audio. So that was the microphone that they sat in your driver's seat when they would run the static sounds. And that was basically playing all frequencies and would be able to map out where the peaks and the valleys were. That was what they called the RTA test, or the real time analysis.
Got it.
So we can do that with our subwoofer box and basically map out if the tuning was correct and if we need to lengthen or shorten the port or anything like that. Well, then at that point, you know, once we've done all the tuning in the building, you know, we just get to play some games. So we need to find some good games with good bass. Quake 2 comes to mind. Duke Nukem a little bit. We could probably get some period correct dance music and some bass.
Nice.
Stuff like that. I mean, well, we can probably pull out the CD player and play some of those old bass CDs that we used to do in car audio. It's like, I think Power Supply was one of them, Bass Masters. There was a lot of them where they would actually just, it would be just all bass, digital bass. Boom, boom, boom. It was one of those things that would just gather attention and...
to be young again.
You could do the hair tricks, you know, where you get the girl with the long hair sitting by your window. And yeah, those were fun. Great, good old days.
Well, I'm excited to see the project in action. We'll see just how much better we can make that Logitech speaker system, how much louder, and
if it actually is practical to build your own speakers for your desktop PC.
Well, I think that's a good point, right? I mean, we build everything else. Why not build our own speaker system for your gaming PC?
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareofsound.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware of Sound by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been an Ninja Lane production, copyright 2022. Thanks for listening.